Well, there are hundreds of books about the Beatles, but a Michigan author has published a new book that's different from all the rest. In its pages, you'll discover the tiniest of audio treats you've never heard before, no matter how many times you've heard these classic rock songs. Current state's Scott Pohl got pulled off of snow duty and is now on Beatles duty. He's here with more.
Hi, Melissa. Everybody knows about the little extra bits that are included on many Beatles records. They might be sound effects or even spoken words. Well, you're about to be reminded of some of them and hear of more for probably the first time. I recently spoke with Ted Montgomery, Associate Director of Communications for the University of Michigan School of Education. He's written a book about these little audio gems called The Beatles Through Headphones. Let me advise that in order to get the most out of this conversation, you should listen through a good set of headphones.
The idea came to me several years ago, actually. I lived in a little house in Royal Oak, Michigan, and it had a basement where all my audio equipment was, and I would go down there every once in a while at night and just put the headphones on and listen to a randomly chosen album. And having always been a Beatles fan, the first one I chose was Sgt. Pepper. And I started hearing things that I didn't remember hearing over external speakers. So after I listened to it once or twice, the whole album, I started making some notes like, wow, listen to this at 2 minutes in. Stuff that you just can't really hear over external speakers or in your car because the detail's not great enough. So after I did a couple albums and made notes, I just put it aside, and then a couple years ago, I rediscovered it. I moved and found a box with my notes and thought, wow, what a cool idea, because as I look around, everyone's wearing headphones. At the gym, while they're walking down the street, in the mall, everyone has cans strapped to their heads, whether they're earbuds or headphones. So what would it be like to listen to the entire Beatles catalog, which is so brilliant anyway, on headphones and hear some extra detail? And it was really enlightening and really fun to do.
Do you think you need really high-end headphones to notice the things we're going to talk about in this interview? Because you mentioned people using the earbuds that came with their phone, that kind of thing. Do you really need top-end equipment for this?
You do, Scott, I think, because earbuds are famous for sound leakage and bad fidelity, really. They're not really made for what I was attempting to do. I used a really high-end pair of Sony headphones. There's a plug for Sony. And they covered my ears completely, and they had some noise reduction technology. And really, that's the only way to do it. And in fact, even to this day, when I listen to headphones, if I'm on the treadmill or walking down the street, I'll use actual headphones and not buds because they just don't do it for me.
Now, I know that you also gave great consideration to both stereo and mono versions of certain songs.
Right.
I'm curious if you noticed things in stereo that you didn't hear in mono or how that played out.
I did. With the stereo recordings, you know, there's a spectrum of stereo from all the way left to all the way right and all points in between. There'd be little things dropped in here, there, all over the stereo spectrum. You can't really hear that in mono because it's, you know, they recorded on two-channel to start, as you know, and there's really in the everything's coming at you in on the same point in the spectrum. Strangely enough, though, there are a couple songs in mono that you can hear instruments more prominently than in the stereo version. The one that comes to mind right away is Happiness is a Warm Gun, which is a great song anyway. The piano and the bass in mono are much louder and make it sound like a completely different song.
Vinyl is so popular again. People think it's better, right or wrong. That's what the perception is. Have you compared vinyl versions of Beatles recordings as opposed to CDs, as opposed to digital downloads?
I have not, and that might be my next project, because just as I was finishing this project up, the vinyl explosion, the return of vinyl happened, and I'm very interested in listening to that because, of course, that's how I first heard the Beatles on vinyl.
Sure.
So I need to do that. I'm sure there's lots of interesting things.
We're talking with Ted Montgomery, the author of The Beatles Through Headphones, The Quirks, Peccadillos, Nuances, and Sonic Delights of the Greatest Popular Music Ever Recorded. And we're going to get into a few examples now. I'm going to cite a few that were in a recent news story about the book, Brian McCollum's recent story about you and the book in the Detroit Free Press. Maybe there are others you'd like to talk about. The few that were cited in that story include what he described as incessant or something like that, hand clapping on the first four Beatles albums. Is there really hand clapping that we've never noticed before on the first four Beatles albums?
I wouldn't say you haven't noticed it before, but I would say on headphones it sounds much more prominent in the mix. I saw her standing there, roll over Beethoven, I mean, throughout the song. Three of them, not just one person. It really, really, especially in the remastered 2009 disc, it's really prominent in their early albums, and then they kind of just dropped it for the most part. You don't hear it much from Rubber Soul on. Same with the harmonica.
The harmonica?
Yeah, very prominent in the early songs, but after...
Love Me Do.
Love Me Do, right. Thank You Girl, all those things. But after about Help, I can only think of Rocky Raccoon as a harmonica song.
You also mentioned the high trebly hiss of Ringo's drums.
Yeah, he had a tendency early on to really ride the cymbal, and it was recorded in such a way where it was really prominent in the mix, and it's part of their sound. There's no doubt about that. Their signature sound, especially as they were breaking as a group, a pop group. But on headphones, it can be a little off-putting here and there because it's really hissy and really trebly. But they corrected that, like a lot of things, as they moved to stereo mixes and stuff like that.
Yeah. A couple of the really specific citations, again, that were in that story by Brian McCollum, include on Obladi Oblada, you hear John Lennon spelling out H-O-M-E. First of all, tell me what part of the song we hear that in. We want to play that for folks. And how did you pick something like that out? What part of the song is that in?
That's in the last verse, right, as McCartney's singing the lead part. And you can barely hear it. And John Lennon intoning in his deep, deep voice, home, H-O-M-E. You could barely hear it, but if you're listening for it and you're on a good pair of headphones, you will hear it.
Okay.
It was just part of the weirdness of that track, I think, because there was lots of talk in the background and fooling around, and no one really liked it except Paul. And so I think they were just trying to get through the making of it and have some fun along the way.
This almost fits in with the stuff people have talked about for years, like John Lennon saying, I buried Paul,
right,
at the end of Strawberry Fields Forever. Does this maybe fit in with that approach to recording, that they were just goofing off to some extent?
Yeah, I think that's what was going on there. I mean, Lennon always claimed he said cranberry sauce,
right,
but there's no doubt in my mind he said, I buried Paul. I can't hear anything else, and I've listened to that hundreds of times on headphones, too. I think they were putting fun little things in there, and part of the point of my book is that I think the Beatles purposely did stuff like that so you could hear it on headphones. I think they were very aware of that, and I also think that, you know, obviously they spent a lot of their recording time on headphones themselves. I think they did it for their own amusement.
I was going to ask you about that. Why would the Beatles bury stuff like this in their music at the time when people weren't really using headphones very much in the 60s for their early albums, for instance? Why would they put stuff into songs that the normal average listener would never hear, at least that they thought at the time the average listener would never hear?
I think it started as something to do for their own amusement and to lessen, ease the boredom of hours and hours in the studio, painstaking recording time. But then later on, they realized people were starting to use headphones, especially around Revolver and Sgt. Pepper, and that stuff is just rich with fun little things to hear on headphones that you can't really hear over speakers.
The producer, George Martin, must have been complicit in this, or at least allowing it to happen. Do you have a feeling for George Martin's role in this?
I do, Scott. George Martin was instrumental, of course, to their sound. He knew the language of translating pop ideas into classical forms, and he was a great conduit for them for that. But I think at first, as you know, the first few albums, the control room was really George Martin's domain, and the Beatles themselves didn't really go up there that often. Later on, when they became more sophisticated as studio artists and learned how to record really well, they were in the room with him, and I think he saw how good they were and how inventive they were and how creative they were that he just, you know, didn't object to too much. Yeah. And I think to his credit, because he had never recorded a rock and roll band ever before. He'd done comedy acts and classical music. So what he did is really cannot be overstated in terms of its importance to their sound.
One last specific thing I want to bring up is the background vocals on Eleanor Rigby, which for many, many years most people assumed were done by John Lennon and George Harrison. You're convinced after listening through headphones that it's all Paul McCartney doing the background vocals on Eleanor Rigby.
I am convinced, and I'm just going by what I can hear on the headphones. I'm not really saying that they're not there. I'm saying I can't hear them.
All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
It sounds like all Paul. And then when they remixed that song for both the Yellow Submarine soundtrack in 2009 and the Love album, it's even more evident that John and George aren't in the mix. So I think that maybe they recorded them, but they didn't use it. Because if you listen to that, and that's a good exercise to get you into this book, I really cannot hear John and George at all.
The book is The Beatles Through Headphones, The Quirks, Peccadillos, Nuances, and Sonic Delights of the Greatest Popular Music Ever Recorded. The author is Ted Montgomery. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.